Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
Fantastic. That turned out to be a hell of a game. My wife went to sleep in the third period, and when she went to sleep, it was we were on pins and needles, or at least I was. And when she woke up, it was 8-3 for the Oilers over the Buffalo Sabres, a blowout victory in the end. But Bruce, kind of a weird game, kind of two games. Sure. One very tight and tense, and the other one, a romp by the Edmonton Oilers. When the Sabres, when their back broke, well, they were playing with a broken back. It didn't look too good. They just started to leak rush goals against. And you can see why this team isn't everything that its fans would hope it would be right now, because you can see the mental mistakes on rush chances against, which is so similar to what we witnessed with the Oilers earlier this year.
Yeah, they were vulnerable to the counterattack for sure. And they were also vulnerable to very heavy offensive zone pressure.
Yeah.
As we'll talk about, there was a couple of excellent sequences following Edmonton penalty kills.
Yeah.
That resulted in Buffalo struggling to clear the zone, and in one case, fatally, they didn't.
Bruce, this is our two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast with one conundrum. But because it was a really exciting game and lots could happen, we'll go with two good things each. What is your first good thing?
Now, I'm going to single out Matthias Ekholm tonight. I thought he had another wonderful game. Yeah, shots on net 18-7 when he was out there, just confirming what my eyes had seen. Two goals, one assist, 3 points, five shots on net, three takeaways. All of those leading the defense, of course. Now, the two goals were what caught my eye today on two absolutely wicked shots. Wow. And the first one was... let me bring up the document. Who was it who set him up? Yeah, it was McDavid and Bouchard that got him the puck in the slot. And he did a toe drag and pulled the puck inside and just fired a wicked wrist shot right in the top corner.
Just between the D-man's legs.
Yeah. It looked like he was covered, and then all of a sudden he changed the shooting angle, fired it between the guy's legs. Rocket of a wrister right in the upper corner of the net. And then his second goal, which was the coup de grace. This was my favorite goal of the night, although it's had some competition. And this was a play where Hyman made a really good play in the defensive boards to work it free. And McDavid jumped on it just outside the Edmonton blue line, and he absolutely deked a guy out of his shorts in the neutral zone. McDavid did. He came in and bursting into the zone with Draisaitl. He fed it to Leon, and Leon did what Leon does, which is show the puck and then craftily do something different with it, which was the spin around behind the back pass into the slot to Ekholm, who came in and just one time wired it. Vicious slap shot right into the top corner. Stop that. And they zoomed in on poor Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen in the Buffalo net, and he looked absolutely shell-shocked after that goal. It was like, I'm not sleeping tonight. And just an absolute rocket of a shot. Two great shots by Ekholm. I mean, what a nice weapon to have in addition to all the other things that he does. And we see it from time to time, but I don't remember two brilliant shots in in the same game. And he delivered those tonight. He also picked up a assist on, where are you there, Matthias? Oh, primary assist on Hyman's goal. It was an outside shot that caught Hyman in the glove and popped into the net. Kind of a fluky one for Edmonton to make up for the fluky one Buffalo just scored a couple minutes earlier.
But a crucial goal, Bruce, because
it turned the game.
Right last at the minute end of the second. Period. That was a huge turning point.
Yeah.
Without that play,
yeah,
this game could quite easily, obviously, have turned out differently. So, yeah, what a play.
Yeah, I just thought Ekholm was all over this game in a good way, and he's going to be getting a very high grade tonight, David.
Yeah, I'm just checking one thing about Ekholm. You know, Bruce, his skill level is what is starting to just blow me away. And I don't know if his skill level has improved since he joined the Oilers. I mean, that's definitely possible that could happen. But because he's playing, generally speaking, with other skilled players, Bouchard, McDavid, Hyman, and Nuge, probably have been his most common line mates this year. Drysdale. And he's asked now to make plays. And he is making plays, Bruce. He is he's so smart with the puck himself. Calm with the puck, effective with it. Nashville, they're doing pretty well. They're a very good team. And they've been a very good team, especially recently. But I'm glad they don't have Matthias Ekholm. Just think if that trade hadn't happened, the Oilers faced Nashville with Ekholm in the playoffs. Not good, because we'd be down a star defenseman, one of the best defensemen in the NHL. If there was a Team Sweden right now, Bruce, I think Ekholm would be on Team Sweden.
Oh, yeah.
There'd be Victor Hedman, Hampus Lindholm would be on that team. Possibly Gustav Forsling of Florida, who's starting to make a big impression. Mm-hmm. And let
He's
me
been
just
good for a while for Forsling.
Yeah, Rasmus Dahlin might be on it. Rasmus Anderson. So those are the and Erik Karlsson, of course, would be a candidate. Mm-hmm. But I think Ekholm would be in there just because of his. A lot of those other players are more offensive specialists. He's just such a fantastic two-way player. One of the best in the entire NHL.
Bruce, yeah, Mike. Nashville won 3-0 at Florida tonight. They are rolling. That's a very tough building to win, let alone get a shutout.
They really are, aren't they? They seem to know what they're doing in Nashville. Mm-hmm. So, Bruce, my first good thing is we talked about how crucial that third goal was. Well, then the fourth goal, of course, is the go-ahead goal. It comes about 5 minutes into the third period, and the Oilers have had already a power play with one great chance from Dreisaitl. And Henrique, so there's a play in the offensive end. And Adam Henrique, Corey Perry, and Evander Kane are out there. And these players all have their critics, I notice. And yes. Edmonton, of course, every player. Yep. Has his critics in Edmonton, even Connor
Pretty
McDavid.
Much.
There's always
most of McDavid's critics are outside of Edmonton. I've noticed
most of them, but not all of them, Bruce. I can assure you. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, Kane and Perry and Henrique. Some people think they're too slow, not good enough, that kind of thing. But did they ever have a shift? And it was a playoff shift. Three times, Bruce, those guys were hammering, battering the puck around the net. And they didn't get a lot of shots in those three occasions. But they were putting so much pressure on the Sabres defense, who just could not handle them. They were getting caved in by these three crafty, nasty, older players. And finally, Stetcher put a shot on net, which Henrik had a really great tip shot on. And the rebound came out again, and then Stetcher put it over to Nurse, and Henrique was in the high slot, and Perry was in the low slot, and the puck went through the legs and went in. So those three forwards on that shift, Bruce, that was one of the best displays of cycling, crashing the net, old school, old timey hockey that you'll see, that I've seen all year long. And I listen, we all these players have pluses and minuses, pros and cons. And there are times when we all, you know, look at these guys and think, are they fast enough? Are they, do they still have it to be in the NHL? But they are all, especially on the attack, exceedingly smart hockey players and very good at creating points and creating goals for themselves. And that was, that's what they did on that play. Out of nothing, they manufactured a goal.
Yeah, it was Kane was the first guy in behind the net stealing the puck and and just causing, you know, the turnover that led to the possession. Then you had these three guys buzzing around the back of the net, the sides of the net, the front of the net. They were just all in this little tiny compact area all around it. And I mean, Kane and Perry, I mean, that's got to be real ugly for the other team to try and deal with.
How would you like to be on the ice against those two guys? Thanks. What a night. Even if they're like, you know, Perry's like, what, 90 years old and Kane's not much younger. But man, those guys, that would be a it would be a nightmare to play against them. Perry just is such a torpedo going into the corners. He is a hard man of hockey. You know, I never really realized it because I didn't, you know, I don't pay that close attention. I'm a Oilers focused. But when the puck's in the corner, he takes a straight line and he goes for it and he often wins it, even though he's slower than almost everyone he's playing against. But he's big and he's still strong. He's got a really heavy stick and incredible ferocity. So he's got some good points, that Corey Perry, even though he may be the slowest player in the NHL.
But ferocity and usually savvy, give or take the dumb penalty he took with 8 minutes left. But we'll
that one.
He's a hard he makes a beeline for the puck, and he is a very crafty guy as well as being, you know, a hard attacking player, but he's also got some real craftiness with and around the puck and with and around opponents.
You just know these younger, faster players, just when they think, I'm going to win this puck. And then something happens and they lose it. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's just barely legal. And and they're pissed off and they can't figure it out. And they're just like, how did that happen? But it happened. It happened. No. So I like that about Corey Perry. Bruce, what is your second good thing?
Yeah, I'm going to single out Darnell Nurse. I thought he had a terrific game. I thought he bossed this game, Darnell, tonight. And it's with his new partner, Troy Stetcher. And Darnell was certainly the workhorse there. And he made, early in the game, he made a great defensive play to deflect a dangerous shot up and into the netting that looked like, you know, it was a slot shot. But a lot of what he did, he was skating real well in this game, and he just was physically in charge, and he was feeling it physically. He landed 8 hits in this game, several memorable ones. He absolutely crushed Dylan Cousins coming in over the blue line on a one-on-one, and he just got folded up when Darnell just mashed him basically chest to chest. He demolished a guy in the corner in a defensive scramble situation that completely put out the fire. He just put the guy down. The puck went nowhere. Carrick came in, cleaned it up, and they were able to get it out from there. And he was also he made one of the best moves I can ever remember seeing him make, with a dangle in the slot, in the high slot, where he just cut in between two guys into the slot and fired a hard shot through a Perry screen that nearly went in. And then, of course, he scored the game-winning goal on that extended sequence. And it was just an outside shot into traffic, but he actually made, to get the shot through, he made a real nifty move to inside out the guy, and then he shot from the guy that was trying to block the point shot, he just outmaneuvered him and got the shot through, and then it went through everything and into the net. And I just thought he was, and as usual with Darnell, not a perfect game. I'm sure we'll mine through our own document of grade A shots and find that he was out to lunch on one or two of them, and that's just part of his game.
I'm not disagreeing with you, Bruce. I thought he was fantastic tonight, and I'll take that trade off of Nurse, the dynamic Nurse. We haven't seen the dynamic Nurse in some time, have we? That guy who's really zeroed in on the game. There was a couple howlers. Like after that utterly brilliant move, it was actually two moves. He made one kind of deke where he spun with the puck, and then he did this kind of reverse knifing through two players, Connor McDavid like.
I was shocked.
As brilliantly as Connor McDavid, the skating in that moment. So I guess every dog will have his day and every cat will mew. But that was an incredible move, Bruce, and a really good shot. And Perry may well have screened it. Like we were having a little debate whether it's grade A. I thought the goalie might have seen it the whole way, but you know, it's hard to know. But a moment later, being Darnell Nurse, he makes this pinch because he's hepped up, he's aggressive, he's going for it, and he makes a pinch. And it's like, wow, don't make that pinch because it leads to a really dangerous chance for the Sabres at the other end. And on the penalty kill, we saw one too where there was a board battle on the sideboards, and there was three Oilers crowded right in there. McLeod was in there, and Nurse was the guy who should have been not in there because there was a guy wide open in front of the net, right? Paterka.
I remember that one, yeah.
And this was a fairly key moment of the game. And it was, Paterka had a chance. Skinner just somehow barely got off his shoulder and didn't go in because Darnell, he was so wide open in front of the net. But this is Nurse. He made all kinds of spectacular plays. He was really bossing the game, as you say, pushing the puck, skating with it. He looked great out there. And it's an interesting thing, Bruce. We'll get to this in a bit, but he may have found his defensive partner.
And when you talk about mistakes, I mean, he got burned on that one where he was over. I mean, Ekholm, the guy I singled out earlier, he got burned on the first goal.
For sure. Where, everybody gets burned.
Everybody gets burned once in a while. It was the same guy, Paterka, wound up with a shot from alone in front. That time Skinner didn't have the answer. Later he did.
Yeah.
But both times he was sort of left to his own devices. And it was, anyway, they did a lot more right than wrong at the end of the day.
My second good thing, Bruce, I was tempted to go with Connor Brown's goal because it was such a beautiful goal. And I'm a Connor Brown fan, I admit, but I'm going to go with the Jack Jinx as the good thing. And it's interesting listening to Jack Michaels because his style is different than almost every other broadcaster. He's constantly bringing up facts, which if you're a superstitious hockey person, drive you crazy because he's saying, you know, the Oilers have they're going into the final 5 minutes of the game. And they've got a lead. And Jack will say something
one goal lead.
Jack will say, the Oilers have never lost in this situation in 15 games where the Oilers have a one goal lead with 5 minutes left. They have never lost. And it's like, why did you say that? But you know what? He is an equal. He just believes in this style of announcing, giving that kind of information and not making anything of it. Like, oh, the goalie is working on his shutout. Is he going to get, like, the ultimate taboo in hockey is to talk about the goalie shutout. And
he worked that one on Jeremy Swayman in that game when the Oilers tied it with the goalie out. They were down 1-0, and they wound up winning it in overtime.
Yes.
And the Jack Jinx came out minute before the tying goal, maybe.
Oh, he throws a mean hex. He's the hexer. So he this year, tonight's game, I should say, after the first period, the Sabres were up 2-1, and the Oilers were lucky there too because he scored a late power play goal. But Jack came out with some line like, the Sabres, if they're leading after the first period, have a record, and I think it was like something like 13-1-1. Or some such thing like that, some outrageous record of success. And if I was a Sabres fan, I'd be thinking, what are you talking about? Like that we're on our way to winning this game. Like, what do you mean? Like this is the Oilers. And that's how I took it. I thought, I don't care about that. This is the Oilers. Like they can, they, you know, and this is the Sabres. They give up goals and the Oilers score them. So didn't bother me at all. But I like the Jack Jinks going to work, doing its thing, and dooming the Buffalo Sabres in this game to an 8-3 loss. That it has power. All I'm going to say about that.
Yeah.
What is your bad thing, Bruce?
Yeah, I'm going to go with start of the game and specifically the first goal that came just 1:38 into the first period. And this was a play where Evander Kane, who did a lot of things right in the game, but in this one, he broke out of his own end and he kind of threw a prayer pass diagonally right through the neutral zone. And there was guys and sticks and stuff in between where he shot it from and where he was trying to shoot it to. And it got picked off by Buffalo and it came back into Edmonton's zone. And Edmonton was quite discombobulated on this play. And first of all, Evan Bouchard tried to stop it up high in the defensive zone, but he kind of got outnumbered, two guys against one along the high boards. And so they were able to slip it down low. And Ekholm just got beat by his man. And of all people, Connor McDavid's trying to cover the front of the net because Bouchard and Ekholm have both rotated. And McDavid's the last guy left. And he's trying to come over to help Ekholm and to sort of team up, take the guy out. And the guy for Buffalo made a really good play to just, I think it was even Tuck. One-handed, just chip the puck Tuck. Over McDavid's stick and right down and onto that of J.J. Paterka. And he had as much time as he wanted to cradle the puck, pick his spot, and bury it. He was all alone in front of our net.
Yeah.
Edmonton's net.
Was that, that line was Thompson, Thompson, Tuck, and Paterka? Was that the line?
Yeah.
I think it was. That Thompson, what a player. Matt, he really brings it against Edmonton. I don't know how he doesn't have a point a game, because every time he plays Edmonton, he's just, he's just a monster out there. He's such a dangerous player.
Five shots tonight, and several of them were wicked drives. Skinner stoned him several times.
My bad thing is the third goal that the Sabres scored. It's in the second period. It gives them a 3-2 lead. And again, it was just like a snafu in their own zone. I think it's CeCe who puts it up the boards. There's a turnover. And then there's just people... Kulak has wiped out in the corner. Mm-hmm. I think he's trying to get back in the play. Mm-hmm. And then Kane, who is F1, he's the forward back. He and CeCe bump into each other and none of them falls, but it's enough that takes Kane out of the play. And Kane, I think, would have got that shooter if he hadn't run into CeCe. And I don't know whose fault it was. It, you know, it was malfunction at the junction, a meeting of the minds as they smashed heads together. And but anyway, CeCe did get over there just in time to get his stick on the other player's stick as he's shooting. So instead of the puck taking the true angle off his stick, which Skinner is anticipating, it takes a weird angle that Stuart Skinner isn't anticipating, and the slow shot dribbles by him. So
under,
it was just
under his pad, under which his he pad lifted,
yeah, which he expecting. Lifted. He looked bad, but I don't know if it was his, like it was such a tricky shot because it was changed suddenly. Mm-hmm. You know, the goalie's reading where the stick's going. That's what they're supposed to do. And they're reading the angle of the player and everything. They know where that shot's going. He knew where it was going and then it didn't go there and it just, and it beat him. Yeah, one mistake after another.
The first part of that play was CeCe getting the puck inside the Oilers' blue line. He had about a 10-foot lead on the guy when he first got the puck. And his one play was just to dump it out off the boards into the neutral zone, but his forwards weren't really in good position for that. So he kept the puck and he skated it behind his own net. And every step he took, it was like the Buffalo guy gained 2 feet on him. He's just so slow. And the guy, by the time CeCe got to behind the net, the guy was almost even enough with him to at least battle for the puck. And so he lobs a backhand around the boards and Kulak just loses his edge or whatever and goes falling into the corner. And then Buffalo got, you know, brought it off the boards and into the the slot where the other chaos ensued. But it was the initial turnover that I really didn't like on that goal. Went from full possession 10 feet inside Edmonton's blue line to Buffalo possession in the corner.
Yeah, I would have liked CC to get that puck out of there straight away. But I guess if there weren't, I didn't check to see if there was forwards to pass to. Maybe did you check that? Like maybe they were out of position.
They were.
So there was nobody on the right side. But then if he's going to retreat, then get on your horse and retreat.
His acceleration is not good. He loses a lot of races to pucks. And he, you know, in this case, he had the puck, but the guy on, you know, his opponent just basically overtook him.
That play is exactly why Cody Ceci is my spirit Oiler, Bruce. Because that's how I play defense. When I have the puck, other players are rapidly catching up to me. I can assure you, steal it off my hockey stick. I had a lot. I have a lot of empathy for him as a slower defenseman. He's trying to use whatever smarts and guile he has to hang in there. And he often does,
and he never gets credit for it. I'll tell you this about Cody Ceci tonight. He made the best defensive stop on Tage Thompson of any Oiler. He took him on one-on-one behind the net. And you sort of think, oh, Thompson's just going to shrug him off and make a centering pass or come out and, you know, try and stuff it in. And CeCe just got the better of him in a physical battle and came away with the puck, and the Oilers came out and cleared the zone. So, you know, he does make good plays. It's not like he's all the time. But and there's enough plays where things don't go right that he's under the microscope right now.
He is. Bruce, what's your number?
My number is 0. This is the number of shot attempts by Connor McDavid in this game tonight. He did not even attempt a shot on net on the night. The Oilers had 39 on goal and 74 attempts. That their top offensive star didn't even attempt a shot. And that just jumped off the screen at me. The only other Oiler, CeCe didn't have a shot, and Henrik and Fogel. But
Henrik had a shot. He tipped that one on net.
Well, I think so too. Yeah. Anyway, he did have, they all had attempts, but McDavid had none. What he did do was lead the Oilers in hits, the Oilers forwards in hits with 4. And he also led the team in points with 4. And he made some great plays on at least a couple of the goals. I think one or two of the assists were just sort of rote plays that turned out well. But the two plays he made in the third period on the Ekholm goal and then on the second Hyman goal, where this was a beautiful goal as well, where Dreisaitl made an inch-perfect shoot-around to the far boards. Yeah. And McDavid just zoomed right past, again, I think it was Dylan Cousins, to pick the puck up and send it right in front of Hyman and rang it in off the post. Another beautiful goal. There were some very nice goals in this game. And so 4 assists. So I'm not saying he played a bad game. I'm just saying it's a pretty unusual game for, you know, no shot attempts whatsoever.
He's now up to 86 assists, Bruce, in 65 games. Mm-hmm. So in the 15 remaining games, he doesn't even have to get an assist a game to reach 100 assists this year. So he's all about the assists, Connor McDavid. That's why he's not shooting.
Right now, he's like Wayne Gretzky in 1985-86 when he decided he wanted to set the Mount Everest of assist seasons, and he wound up with 163 assists, but only 52 goals that year. It was the only year in 6 that he didn't lead the league in goals because he was so focused on setting plays up.
I'll say McDavid ends the year with 105 assists.
Okay.
Bruce, my number is +52. And this is the Oilers plus minus as a team for the entire season. They are now third tied for third in the NHL with the Carolina Hurricanes at plus 52, and they've played three fewer games than the Hurricanes. The other teams ahead of them have both played two more games than the Oilers. Florida's at plus 56 and Vancouver's at plus 55. This isn't like one of those sawed off stats where you're trying to make the team look good by picking a certain date in the year where they started to get hot, and then you forget all that crappy hockey before
US
that.
Thanksgiving.
That's it. We hear that all the time. And I do that myself. Now, you know,
me too.
That's normal. You're looking for streaks and you're looking for hot streaks, cold streaks. But if you really want to rate the team, it's probably, although I know the analytics guys will say it's the last 25 games that really predict best how a team's going to do next. So, but nonetheless, I think in all fairness, going over the whole year for a set like this is the right way to do it. And even when you do that though, Bruce, the Oilers are right near the very top and poised to take over the top probably by the end of the year if things keep going well. Plus five game tonight doesn't hurt, but at all. But they have been playing very well, and especially under Knobloch, they've been playing fantastic hockey in general. So good for them. This is an amazing year, amazing comeback season for the Oilers after that horrific start. And they're clearly one of the elite teams in the NHL and clearly one of the favorites to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, well, they're now, since U.S. Thanksgiving, 37-9-3. 37-9-3 over a 49-game span.
Do you know what their points percentage is?
Oh, well.
Must be 7...
So 781 before today, and it would be up a couple more points with that win for that particular span. I mean, it's 49 games, and that's 77 points. So,
you know, of course,
they win the
we've
next
been through
game,
this before, right? We've had two seasons where they ended really strong and were smoking hot going to the playoffs, and both times they lost. So it's just so apparent, I think, to every Oilers fan, like all this discussion and regular season stuff is just that. It's just discussion. It's ultimately inconsequential to what happens in the playoffs. Everybody's got their eyes on the prize. And I suspect the team does too. I'm hoping we'll see a whole other level of play. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's going to take, a whole other level of play from all of the players to win the cup.
It's all about that third act, isn't it?
Indeed.
So Bruce, you're using goals for from standings, eh?
Yeah, just the standings.
So that's, that includes a shootout.
Yeah,
goals.
Sure.
So,
it does, yeah.
So
yeah, well, that's
shuffles
official
the
number.
Deck slightly, but it isn't. It isn't.
Isn't it the official number?
Well, if you go into the stats page, they don't count those at all.
Yeah. Okay.
They just I use real goals, but even though those are polluted by all the empty netters that are being scored these days with goalie pulls with 8 minutes left and stuff. So
I'm going to say real men score empty netters and shootout goals as well. Bruce, the conundrum. CeCe, Daharnay, or Stetcher? You can pick two out of three. Who are you picking? That is tonight's conundrum. And I want you to argue for who you're going to sit, why you would sit that player.
So we're talking about next game?
We're just talking about, we'll just talk about next game.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. I would be sorely tempted to sit Cody Ceci next. I've been talking all along about rotations of getting guys in and out up front, but I think the same holds true on right defense now that there's an extra one. And Stetcher, I thought was pretty good tonight. Got a point, made some real nice outlet passes. A little chaos in his game and behind his own blue line, eh? But I thought he and Nurse had a pretty good game together. And, you know, Daharnay now, he sat out a couple of games. Now, assuming that he is fully healthy and ready to go, and he said he was ready to play the third period last Saturday night. So,
yeah,
but you
he's a
hockey player.
Yeah.
So anyway, but they'll want to get him back in there at some point. And I'm not sure that the knee jerk reaction would be, well, pull the number seven guy back out there. And on the other hand, as a decent and compassionate coach that I would obviously be in the NHL, sitting Cody Ceci on a road trip to Ontario against his two former teams would be a bit of a kick. And maybe you want to give him a kick. But if they were just sort of playing any old Joe opponent, I think it would be his turn next to have a seat and watch a game or two and maybe rest up a little bit. You know, I mean, it's a grind.
And I think that's how you'd
for all these over 30 guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, he's not skating well right now. And who knows whether there's any reason for that. Or he's just getting older and slowing down. And
yeah, I see them selling that to CC. So I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it's them selling it to CC as essentially we have three right shot defensemen that we're going to rotate the rest of the year. And we've got to see what we have in Troy Stetcher. Mm-hmm. Yep. We know what we have in you right now, Cody, solid, dependable defenseman, but we need to rest you. You need to be rested and ready to go for the playoffs. And there's also competition going on here. And we need to see who can rise up and give us the best performance. Geez. So there's no doubt about that. And right now, CeCe, he has been in the worst slump of his Oilers career for the last 6 weeks since the All-Star break. And he's looking slower.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could be wear and tear. A break could be just what he needs. Daharnay is the 6'7" version of the Carolina Cowboy. He is a superb defensive defenseman who doesn't bring much on the attack at all.
Right.
But he is a superb defensive defenseman, and he is 6'7", and he's a nasty player. So he has attributes that hardly anyone else on the team has. And I think he will be in the lineup, and it'll be between Stetcher and CeCe in the end. Again, I want to credit to Jason Strudwick, who was the first to really note, other people have probably said this too, just how much Nurse would thrive and do better with an offensive defenseman at his side. And Stetcher is no Bobby Orr, but he's not as good on the attack as I had hoped, but he's not as weak on defense as I had feared. He seems to be fairly good with the puck and okay-ish as a defender. And but fairly good with the puck is better than CeCe or Daharnay. I wouldn't say either of those guys is in that category anymore. And Stetcher might really free up Nurse to play the kind of game we saw tonight. Maybe just a coincidence that we finally saw Darnell Nurse play this way again when he was with Stetcher. But I'm not sure that it was. I think playing with a very certain passer of the puck and a smart positional attacker like Stetcher could really be good for Darnell Nurse. Plus, you know, he's just going to get the puck in better positions, faster, smarter positions, more able to make good plays himself. So I'd like to see how this develops. I think Stetcher has definitely earned another game with Nurse. CeCe could use the rest. There is a competition going on. So yeah, it's time for CeCe to take a few games off and put in Daharnay and keep Stetcher in there and see what happens next. And it's not like he's going to be out forever. CeCe will get more opportunities, but the Oilers really need to figure that they need another offensive defenseman, and it could be Stetcher. They've got to find out if it's him.
Yeah, well, starting with tonight, they had 16 games left in just 29 days.
So yeah.
This idea of, you know, using your extra players at every opportunity is smart. And I think we're seeing it already from Coach Knobloch. These last few games in particular, we've seen guys coming in and out. We've seen You know, Ryan come back in and given a shot on the third line before coming back out. We've seen Stetcher go in two different circumstances, replacing Ekholm on the left side and then replacing Deharney on the right side. McDavid, boy, he sure had some nice things to say about Deharney the other day. I don't know if you heard it on Oilers Now. He talked about what a, you know, solid defenseman and penalty killer he was. But the thing he said that really caught my ear was how good his passes are. He says he makes lots of real good subtle plays in our zone to get puck to good spots that we can do something with it. And it's not necessarily the highlight reel that's even going to show up on the score sheet. Well, anytime you pass it to McDavid, you know, there's a chance. But that he may, you know, he puts pucks on the tape. And
he's passing better, Bruce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
But he is one of the lowest scoring defensemen in the NHL this year.
Yeah, he's
not. No. That is, and Russell was the same way. Russell can make a nice pass too. Like these players, like he can move the puck to Harney, you know, a bit defensively, especially, and it's improved. It's just in the offensive end of the ice, he's really not that strong at all yet. Yeah. And maybe that'll come a little bit more where he's effective. Cause if you're going to play with Nurse, you're going to be playing a lot with McDavid and Draisaitl at even strength. And I'm not seeing it on the attack. I don't see that as optimal for the Edmonton Oilers. It slows things down. It takes away creativity from those groups of players. And I don't think it's the answer to have I think he's your third pairing guy on the Edmonton Oilers this year. The battle is for second pairing. And I think it is between CeCe and Stetcher right now. And if neither of those guys can do it, then you have to figure out, okay, is it Kulak? Could he move over to the right side and play with Nurse? And then you move Broberg up. So there's some different options. And I just think they got to keep trying Stetcher for now. Mm-hmm. Give him a run of games and see how he does, because we need to know this. That is nice that McDavid said that. And I see that. Just not so much in the offensive end. In the defensive end, I see it. Like smart, solid, safe plays with the puck consistently from Vinny Deharney. But not when it comes to putting up scoring plays.
My wife was saying tonight when Tage Thompson was running rampant in the Oilers zone that they missed Deharney in this game for that specific assignment. That he was the one guy sort of big enough to stand up and, you know, battle that guy on something resembling even terms.
There's many Deharney fans in the McCurdy household, I feel.
Yes, there's three of us.
You know what? There's lots of Deharney fans in every Oilers household. He is one of the fan favorites.
Absolutely.
Embraced Underdog by both. Like there's not actually a huge faction of people that don't like him. Now that I think of it, I don't hear that constant. There's this constant grinding about so many of the players, right?
The ones who don't like his game. There's nobody who doesn't like him, I don't think.
He must have good Corsi by chance.
They criticize it. It's his game they criticize. It's not
okay.
It's not everybody likes the man and they like his story. And
well, he and Kulak have been together, you know, such a fine third pairing. And you're right, Deharnay's story, like the whole thing with his affirmations, the way he's built himself up mentally, as well as physically to become an NHL hockey player is a very inspiring story and a good lesson for other people to follow. You know, the mental toughness that he developed in the last 5 years is really impressive, and it's allowed him to be a professional hockey player in the NHL.
21st round draft choice makes good. He went in the 7th round of his third year of eligibility. So that's the math there. One other thing we should mention, Dave, before we move on, is the Oilers signed a guy today.
Oh, that's right.
Western Hockey League. You wrote about it. And it's James Stephan, son of the famous, infamous Patrick Stephan, who was once a first overall draft choice for Atlanta Thrashers way, way back. And he is, James is a high scoring right winger from Portland Winterhawks of WHL. He's on the verge of both a 50-goal and 100-point season. If his last week goes well, he's got 48 goals and 99 points with a week to go on the slate. And he's about 6 foot, 185 pounds, so not small, not big, but not like pint size, like some of the snipers. And those are pretty good numbers. And now he's a 20-year-old overager. But he's basically in the exact same boat as James Hamblin when the Oilers signed him out of Medicine Hat as a 21-year-old, I think, you know, in his overage season in March of 2 years ago. And it's a decent roll of the dice.
It is. Why not? They don't have a lot of draft picks. They got to figure it out.
Right.
Long shot, son of hot shot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was well done.
Patrick Stephan was the first overall pick in his draft, mm-hmm. of course. Never really panned out, although he did play almost 500 NHL games. So that's pretty darn good.
Giving him chances.
They did in Atlanta, where the Oilers Stephan was born, Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
So, and the NHL's thinking of going back to Atlanta. So we'll see about that. Well, Bruce, you got to write the game grades tonight. And the next game is Saturday night, I guess.
At Toronto. And then they follow up at Ottawa on Sunday, 5 and 4 o'clock.
Oh, nice.
That Saturday game is going to be showcased. And we've already been told by Jack and Louie tonight that the A-team will be announcing that game on Saturday. Chris Cuthbert and Craig Simpson. You know, you've
been. Oh, we haven't heard them either.
Yeah, we haven't played at Toronto.
Are they still burbling in Toronto about Austin Matthews winning the MVP award? Is that still on there? It's not happening at this point. It's going to be one of the big three, right? Like, yeah, Kucherov,
I think so too.
MacKinnon, or McDavid. It's going to be one of those guys, and I think it'll be the one. If one of them can actually pull out ahead of the others, mm-hmm. McDavid's now 6 points back of Kucherov and 5 back of MacKinnon. Maybe the fact that McDavid's a bit of an underdog and catching up to them will add some momentum to his claim. I mean, I don't hear a lot of people talking about McDavid, I mean, other than me, every podcast. But we'll see. He's got a real chance. If I had to bet right now, I would bet on MacKinnon. But McDavid he's got a real shot too, obviously.
Yeah.
Any others that you think? I don't think Matthews has a chance. Like when he was on pace for 70 goals,
mm-hmm.
maybe he's got 57. It's
still possible.
But even then, like, it's just, he's way behind in the points race. He's not close.
He's not in the top 10.
He's eighth, or he was. I'm just looking at the standings.
Oh, ninth. No, he is ninth.
Okay, yeah.
89 points, one behind Draisaitl.
Yeah, Leon's overtaken him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a good little player, or big player, you know, for Toronto, he's a good player, but he's no Connor McDavid or Nathan MacKinnon.
Yeah. Well, my guess is McKinnon's got the leg up because, some of it's voter fatigue, right? That, McDavid's won 3 times and Kucherov won one as well in the past. And so some might say, well, it's a toss up between those. All three have been great players for a while, but McKinnon's never won it, so I'm going to vote for him. Like,
could be.
Going to be some of the voter dynamics that take.
You know, and Kucherov's playing on a not exciting team, and he's also I don't know if this will be held against him, Bruce, but his dogging it in the All-Star Game skills competition, I think left a bad taste in my mouth, and I wouldn't mm-hmm. be surprised if it left a bit of a bad taste in other people's mouths. Like, who is this guy? He's such a great player. But, you know, I know you don't like him already because he's a world-class dive artist. But he is a fantastic player. But, yeah, man, what was he doing in that skills competition? Just was totally just slacking off. Anyway.
McDavid's got one game in hand on him and two in hand on
MacKinnon.
MacKinnon. And I think Tampa was playing late tonight, so this may have changed. Or it was a low-scoring game.
Good.
Last I checked, anyway. And you got a score on this game. Vancouver won their game. Right. And Tampa beat San Jose 4-1.
Oh.
Late, they scored. It was low scoring late. Oh, yeah, here we go. Kucherov, 78, 79, 80, 81 assists. He got 4 assists tonight, just like McDavid.
Jeez.
He assisted every goal for Tampa.
Well,
and he's been piling them in. Like credit. I think he's got 15 points in his last 4 games or something right now.
Give
him credit. He had a 5. Anyway, yeah.
He's a hell of a player. He's a hell of a skill.
So he's now up over 120.
Yeah.
So
it's too bad everybody hates him, except at least in Edmonton.
He's a wonderful skilled player. He does have ways to piss you off, though. And every time I see him play against my team, I don't like him.
Everyone gets pissed off. Many people get pissed off at McKinnon too. I just love the way McKinnon plays. Like, he's so ferocious.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All these players at the very top end of, you know, the top 4 scorers. Pasternak is such a great player too. He's so dangerous on the ice. And then I think there's a little bit of a drop off after that. Although Mikko Rantanen is always such a fearsome player too. I see Rantanen and Matthews actually in kind of the same category. They are both obviously excellent, fantastic hockey players, and just scary with the puck, especially shooting the puck. But I think these 3 top end guys and Pasternak are right in this league this year, are in a different class than the rest. All right, Bruce, let's leave it there. Thanks for talking tonight.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.